Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, California is experiencing an epidemic of what would ordinarily be alarming proportions. Nearly 700 herds of cattle in the state, or 71% of all herds, have caught H5N1, aka bird flu, since last August. And this crisis continues to escalate globally with an unprecedented historic rise in cases, posing all sorts of serious challenges. So why aren't we talking about it? Is it just out of sheer exhaustion of talking about viruses? Well, Maren McKenna is a science author and journalist. She joins me now to discuss. Maren, this bird flu thing has been sort of around for a number of years, right? But it really sort of started to peak in the news around April in the States, when we saw species jumps into cows and herds started being affected. Can you give me a little bit of a state of play as to where we are at the moment and what has been happening for the last number of months?
It's so complicated. And thanks for asking me to talk about it. So you're right, there's a very long history with this virus, almost 30 years, shockingly, at this point, from when it first jumped from wild waterfowl into chickens in Hong Kong back in 1997, made about 18 people sick, killed six of them. The then territory of Hong Kong stopped the epidemic by killing every single chicken living there. And the virus went away for a few years, came back in 2003, started moving across the world, and has been up and down in this sort of wave form, with never really taking off in humans, but in the background, causing a lot of damage to varieties of both wild bird populations and poultry. We had a massive poultry epidemic in the center of the United States in 2015. And now, as you say, since the beginning of 2024, it's shown up in cows. And this is very odd, because no one ever expected that cows were going to be a species that would be particularly vulnerable to this. Other species, yes. Pigs have long been known as a sort of mixing vessel for strains of flu.
Dirty animals.
Promiscuous virus, yeah. But, and also in that, when things started getting bad in the early 2020s, a lot of ocean mammals and sea lions and so forth were discovered to be vulnerable. Several species were really badly hit. Some wild waterfowl species have been almost wiped out. But cows was new. And cows are a particular problem because, as anyone in your listenership who's at all agricultural will understand, particularly for dairy cattle, what you do with dairy cattle involves you being up close and personal with them, either with their faces or with their back ends, at least twice a day. So it's very difficult to avoid getting exposed to whatever that cow is incubating. Mm. And as a result, this new strain of flu that seems to have settled in cows, not just in California, but now in, I think, 16 states across the United States, this has started jumping to people in a way that's really troubling.
Well, let's just, because I don't want to freak people out. It is January, and I was sort of half unsure as to whether or not to cover this, but I don't want, you know, people say, well, how come you never told us about this, Jonathan? So I do want to cover it. But in terms of the scary stuff, let's just say first, in cows, it's not a major disease, right? It's not killing cows. In humans, it's not having very high mortality rates. In its current form, in these animals, it's kind of like a cold or a flu. For the most part, is that correct, or am I wrong on that?
So what the United States Department of Agriculture has said, from the amount of data that they've been able to gather, and available data is a problem that we can talk about if you want, they say that in infected herds, 2 to 5% of the cows die. But more important for most of the producers, since that's a pretty low percentage, is that it depresses milk production by about 20%. And that's a really significant hit because, ooh, as with any kind of animal agriculture, or really any agriculture in the United States, farms actually run on pretty thin margins.
Yeah.
So losing 20% of your production for some period of time is really troubling, especially since this is a new disease in cows. we don't really know what the long-term impact is. No one has ever, to this point, taken cows into some sort of safe biological liberal laboratory and infected them with bird flu and let it play out, right? We don't know what the natural history of this in cows is because it's new.
But these species jumps that we're hearing about, in and of themselves, they're not always a bad thing. But by moving from one species to another, it is potentially quite dangerous, right? Because if it mutates in a particular way, it might find a route to spread further and cause very serious symptoms as it develops, as we saw with COVID.
Right. And so H5N1 is really interesting in this regard, because despite the fact that it's been sort of knocking at the door of the human world for about 30 years now, since 1997, it hasn't taken off in a major way. It hasn't gained the ability to pass easily person to person. It's done that a few times, but then always died out. And so there are fewer than 900 human cases across those, I guess it's 28 years at this point, scarily. And about half of those have been fatal. So that's not very much, though it's terrible, of course, for anyone who gets infected or anyone, of course, who dies. But if you look back through history, all those flu pandemics that we heard about in the 20th century and further back that got mentioned a lot at the start of COVID, where millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people died, all of those started with some jump from the animal world, probably from the world of birds into humans. And the more that virus or strains of that virus get exposed to humans and get to replicate, the more they get to sort of learn our systems and figure out what doors to our immune systems they can open and close in order to settle in and really cause havoc.
I know I don't want to ask you about Irish specifics. We don't seem to have an enormous outbreak of bird flu from what I've seen. It's not an enormous, obviously it is a concern, but it's not something that is of a high priority at the moment, it seems here. But in terms of other countries, is the United States unusual in the number of cases that it's seeing, particularly like in states like California?
It seems that way, but there's all kinds of questions that are immediately posed by saying that. The first is, yes, the United States just has very large animal production. Across the country, California, which you mentioned at the start, happens to be the biggest dairy state, but there are other very large dairy states in which not only is production big, but also the dairies themselves are very large with thousands of cows and very automated and very, I guess, sort of roboticized. This is not the kind of dairy farm where you have maybe 20 cows or 50 cows and you are face to face with them every day and you know their names and so forth. Now, there are good things and bad things about that kind of automation and size in that the producers say they can monitor the health of the cows much more scientifically. But it is very true that dairy production and other kinds of cow production here are just really big.
Yeah.
But in addition, it's really unclear how big the problem is, because in the United States, public health, including veterinary public health or agricultural public health, is really a function of the states more than it is the federal government, though, of course, the federal government has a lot of things that it can do through the Department of Agriculture and the various health agencies. And so it's really not clear exactly how big this problem is, because not all of the states yet have agreed to collect the kind of data that would be necessary to say, well, is the problem's actually this big versus that big? Mm. And looking at it from the producer's side, from the farmer's side, there's definitely been resistance to allowing surveillance, to allowing health checks in some parts of the country that are politically aligned in various ways. But I would have thought that
you know, when it comes to human health, it's one thing, and that's, you know, this political divide, it seems to me from the outside, is centered on the right of the individual versus the right of society. That, you know, that someone's individual right to take these measures or not is one thing, but when we're talking about animal health, you know, you're talking about very much, you know, economics. And I would have thought the approach to animal health would have been much more adherent with reducing virus outbreaks, because that would lead to lower costs in the long term. And so do we really see a Republican, you know, resistance to monitoring and intervention when it comes to actually protecting the bottom line? Or are they just dubious about the effects of the virus?
My own sense of what's going on at this point is that the production side, and not uniformly, right? Nothing here is uniform,
yeah,
has been reluctant to step forward because in certain places, there's no guarantee of what's going to happen to those farmers at the back end of that process. What if a farmer steps up and says, you know, I think five of my cows have a cold and it might be bird flu, and the local authorities or state or federal say, right, we're putting your farm in timeout. You can't produce milk, or you're going to have to throw it away. You can't sell anything. You can't contribute to the local cooperative.
Yeah.
How does that farmer's farm come out of the timeout again? No one's really sure about that. How are they adequately compensated for that drop in production that we talked about if it goes all over the long term? Now, back in the spring, federal authorities did create some compensation programs for decreased milk production, but they had to kind of spin that up on the fly because this has never happened before. You know, all the disaster planning to this point for big epidemics of animal diseases in production animals in the United States are all shaped around diseases that have an obvious negative effect on the animals, like H5N1 in poultry, kills poultry, no question. African swine fever in pigs kills pigs very messily. They know what to do with that,
yeah,
the authorities do. And the farmers are highly incentivized to help because otherwise their animals will be gone. But in a situation where your animals are getting ill but may recover and their production levels may come back and the systems haven't been built to make sure that you're going to keep your relatively low margin of profit up there so your farm can keep going, there's a lot of uncertainty here.
Yeah. I know you've covered a lot of stuff over the years on COVID as well. And, you know, we spoke many years over the years about viruses. I wanted to finish up by asking you, in the early days of COVID, it seemed like we were all saying, you know what, we're going to be so much better prepared for the next pandemic because we've gone through this one. And now I'm wondering, with the political divide and the messiness of the comms and the uncertainty, can we say that we actually might be worse off, or at least actively, knowingly going into it worse off? What's your take on that when it comes to either, you know, a potential future pandemic of bird flu or COVID 9.0 or wherever we are?
I definitely don't think we're better off.
Oh, man. How are we not better off?
That's not just me, right? In the past couple of weeks, a number of really prominent public health researchers, virologists, and so forth have said in the U.S. media, or have taken to media themselves in essays in places like in the major medical journals and so forth, saying, we really didn't learn our lesson. And we didn't learn our lesson. We can see that we didn't learn our lesson because we haven't immediately instituted surveillance everywhere to be sure that we know where this virus is. We haven't started spinning up vaccination programs to make sure that farm workers who are exposed to potentially sick cows don't become
vectors,
their own personal mixing vessels. There are things that could have been happening. We can say that it's political, and to a certain degree, it probably is, because the two parties in the United States have become identified with very different attitudes toward collective public health. But also, I think we have to allow for the fact that people are just exhausted.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear about COVID again. When I was studying the 1918 flu in graduate school, I was astonished by the well-documented phenomenon that it just fell through a sort of memory hole in the culture. No one talked about it. No one made major pieces of art about it. It wasn't like tuberculosis or HIV, where people wrote plays and novels and so forth. Everyone just pretty much pretended it didn't happen. I could not understand how that could have happened. And now with COVID, we've done the exact same thing again. Memory hold. It didn't happen. Past 5 years of our lives, gone. And so it's as though we're starting a response to H5N1 kind of from zero again.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, COVID was, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime event at the time. Let's be relatively positive. Let's hope that we okay, won't see another one positive in my lifetime. And let's do maybe more than cross our fingers. But for now, it's interesting to kind of see what's going on and how we're approaching this current bird flu epidemic in the States. Mariam McKenna, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.